from beautiful Las Vegas, Nevada. It's The Fake Show with our hosts, Jim Chofte and Kendall Tenney.
Is it wrong that I'm excited?
Well, the craft brewery phenomenon has really taken off in the United States the past several years. Las Vegas is an up-and-comer in craft brew circles, and one of the newer brew pubs here in the Valley is the Old School Brewing Company. This is our second craft beer episode, second of what we hope are many craft beer episodes, and it's my honor and pleasure to introduce everybody to Jim Wilson, who I've known for how many years would you say we've known each
Holy
other?
Holy cow, I think we started about 10 years ago, 10, yeah. 12 years ago.
Yeah, when you were with Barley's.
Yeah, back in 2004, I think.
You are the brewmaster now of Old School Brewing Company. Tell me about your story, because you started out maybe not as some brewmasters did, which is they went directly or maybe out of college and studied that type of thing, went over to Germany or whatever it was.
Yeah.
You were doing something else, and you studied something else in school.
Right, yeah. Literally, my start was in physics, and the biggest ability I was able to apply it to was getting into race cars. I was working on, actually aircraft at the time, and race cars. I was with a company called Butler Aircraft in Redmond, Oregon, and was fueling up airplanes and working on those big aircraft tankers, the firefighter tankers. And across the field, of course, was some folks who owned a Porsche dealership, and they hooked me up with Porsche building race cars. I guess you have to kind of be a relatively reliable mechanic to get into that business, and I didn't kill anybody in an airplane, so they decided to let me work with race cars.
So you walked across the street. You said, I'd kind of like to get into this business now.
Yes.
How many years did you do that?
I ran at that about 4 years, just working for them as a mechanic and an engineer. Yep.
Now, were you doing race cars? Or
only race cars. That's all I worked on the entire time.
Did you find that rewarding? Was it something you figured you'd do forever?
It was an absolute giggle. There's an adrenaline rush. You know, a car comes screaming into the pits and you got to jump and change tires in 15 seconds, or you're playing with hot fuel, pouring it across something that's hot and smoking already, trying to wonder if you're going to immolate yourself for the evening. Or
that is a giggle.
Yeah, a little bit of an adrenaline rush. Yeah.
So you were traveling all over the place. Where were you going with this?
Oh, it was all over the West Coast. We ran everywhere from Olympia, Washington, clear down to the Riverside Raceway.
What were the class of?
IMSA, the International Motorsports Association. We ran in GTUs, which is the under 2 liter series, running smaller motor cars. And
did that ever make it to Vegas?
I think the last time that we any had GT series cars was clear back when we had the Formula One race back in early 80s.
So that was even after Elvis did the racing.
Yeah, barely.
In the
barely.
Fake Las Vegas.
Yeah,
remember that movie?
Yeah.
So how then, did you just start home brewing at that point?
I was, one of the cars I was working on, it was one of the factory D production cars, and it was made for a big time driver out of Germany. Guy had picked it up in Oregon, and we were going to put it onto the local road racing circuit, and I was enjoying the heck out of that. It was a really sophisticated car compared to what I was used to, and we got a sponsorship from Portland Brewing Company when they had taken over one of the older breweries in downtown Portland, and they were one of the first craft breweries in the Portland scene. This is about 84, 1985. Of course, being, you know, my relatively stout stature, I was convenient for them because I could carry kegs, and I was able to supply, you know, to the other drivers. I could bring people over and let them sample the wares of this place as our sponsor. And that was where I actually tasted good beer. And up to that time, I realized at that point beer was not just the same yellow beverage that I grew up despising because it was bitter and nasty. The folks, of course, always drank Olympia, Rainier, all the local Northwest stuff. And
yeah, when I was in college, it was, not to put down Pabst
but
or
as a nine,
Blatz.
Yeah, as a nine-year-old, it wasn't that exciting. And so I really didn't get that much of an interest in it. And so as I grew through my teen years, I really never took off on it and didn't enjoy it that much. But then I tasted it. Tasted good beer. I believe it was a stout. It was the very first one I had tasted from Portland Brewing. And here's this nice black liquid in this glass, and I'm wondering, what is this? Is this dangerous? Should I be drinking this? And it had flavor.
I'm drinking a vanilla porter, by the way, which is one of your best, I think.
It's one of my favorites.
I know what you mean, too. When you try a darker beer, it's got some heft to it. There's something full about it.
Yes. I really think that's more of a mental issue. You think of it as being darker, it's going to be stronger, it's going to be a bigger character to it. Literally something like Guinness is just almost a light beer. It's light in alcohol and really doesn't have much to it but flavor. But the one I got to try at that time had alcohol too. it was probably a 9 or 10% beer, very strong beer, as compared to the normal 4.5%, you know, American lager. It was like, wow, something hit me in the taste buds, woke me right up. So I decided to go and...
Hit you in the booze buds.
Yeah. So I went back at it and decided, hey, I gotta, you know, finished out some studies in biochemistry and spent a lot of time brewing at home and managed to get a...
You went back to school.
Yes, I did.
To get involved in this.
Exactly. Mostly I went back to satisfy my own curiosity. I had my own mental process is that I like to study as much as possible. I was homeschooled in high school. I homeschooled my own son.
Wow.
And I want to study. I wanted to find a place to study. And of course, that's something you really can't study at home. You have to go where the people are who have that knowledge. So I went to college.
Where did you go?
Where's Portland State in Portland, Oregon, and a little bit of time at Central Oregon Community College and Oregon State University.
Is Oregon the leader when it comes to craft brewing?
It really is.
Because I hear about Oregon all the time.
Yeah. The hops, of course, grow there. It's easy. You can grow miles and miles of hops, and no problem at all. The natural weather is perfect for it. And the biggest flavor component that you'll find in a beer these days is the hops. And so when it was easy to get them, you know, all you had to do was go over to the neighbors. It may have been a weed growing in the yard, or there was a hop farm just down the road, and you could go pick up an extra 20 or 30 pounds for a batch, throw it in, and just throw some extra flavor into your beer to surprise people with. And it's really caught on. The styles that are the standard bearers now for the whole craft brewing industry.
The hoppy IPA stuff, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
even not necessarily just the India Pale Ale, but things like the extra special bitters, the English style beers, the heavy English version of, you know, the Americans, of course, take things and go a little bit too far with it on purpose, you know, because it's, we want more. We want faster cars. We want hoppier beers. And, all that is just so naturally easy to come across in Oregon that it was just a natural thing to happen.
What do you use here? I mean, in Las Vegas, we're not exactly known for as being a farming community. Yeah. Where do you get your ingredients?
I literally source my barley out of British Columbia, Canada. A company up there called Gambrinus is a malting company. A guy by the name of Matthias Haben, he's from Austria, has a malting company up in a little town in British Columbia, brings in barley from all over the West, in the States and in Canada, and goes through the malting process where you sprout it and roast it to get the different colors and characters out of it. And I have him supply it to me down here, brings me down truckloads, and my hops come either from Yakima or Philomath, Oregon. Yakima, Washington, or Philomath, Oregon.
Now, is this why Las Vegas maybe is a little bit behind when it comes to craft breweries?
No, that's really not the issue. The thing that I've really encountered is, of course, there's a little bit of a premium cost with a craft beer. You know, you don't make it in as big a volume, and it is really hard to sell a good beer when you have so many places. Every place that has a gaming license is giving away cheap beer. It's really hard to overcome that the financial aspect of it immediately. Somebody wants a free beer, they're going to go here for the free beer. And it's kind of hard to convince them. You got to get the beer into their hands and get it on their taste buds. To make them realize it's better. It's not more expensive, it's better.
And you kind of savor it and...
You enjoy it and treat it like food instead of
treating it... Because I'm telling you, Jim, in college I drank a lot more than I do now because I could.
Yeah.
But, you know, you'd throw them back without any thought, in those days at least, without any thought, it was just the buzz more than anything
exactly.
else.
Exactly. Yeah, now people are starting to realize the different flavors that come from around the world. Well, we kind of lost a whole... culture in our country back when Prohibition hit. We went from around 1,700 breweries in the country down to less than 20 in a period of about 3 weeks after Prohibition was signed in.
Wow.
So we lose all those people. There were no longer breweries. They're no longer in beer. You know, they have to take up a new job. And all the individual growth, you know, all the individual stylings of each of those persons. Nobody made beer identical. Everybody made it different. And we lost all that individuality. So everybody that survived... pretty much made the same kind of yellow beer, and that's what we stuck with for, well, clear into the 80s, well, late 70s when Jimmy Carter signed the bill that allowed us to homebrew without having to worry about the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco,
and Firearms. Is that how Billy Beer started?
No, I think Billy started ahead of that. He really wasn't too concerned about what the rules were.
No.
You know, he made beer at home. Yeah.
Was Billy our first home brewer?
Oh, no, no. a lot of people did it without any legal consideration.
Yeah, right.
Like my family with their little bit of time that they have making other liquors, you know. I'm from Missouri and Arkansas, so there's a little bit of backwoods stuff going on.
Now, well, in Wisconsin, yeah, we were close to some of the mob stuff that was heading up north from Chicago, so yeah, who knows? So the homebrewing thing, then you started. You studied the biochemistry, and then you started to experiment a little bit.
Right, a lot.
Now, that seemed, in the 80s, that seems well ahead of your time. I mean, we were still just drinking the big corporate brews at that time. Yeah.
And I think probably one of the biggest influences that people in America experienced was people coming back in the military. Somebody went to Germany. They stayed at Ramstein Air Force Base, and they were stationed there and came back. And as soon as they found out that there was actually a good tasting beer here, they told their friends. And then somebody, eventually one of them was a home brewer. And so they started making beer, and then those people started making breweries.
Speaking of Germany, I don't know if you would, I'm sure you've heard this, but the guys from Stone Brewing in San Diego are opening a craft brewery over in Germany. It's kind of ballsy, isn't it?
We're finally taking... One thing that Americans have always done is take some technology. We take what the old world had, and we make it better. And so here, we're taking back our improvement. We're going to take it to them and show them what the Americans did with it. Whether or not they like that idea is another story.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. That how dare you, yeah, you know?
Yesterday, I had a group, literally there were four men came into the pub who were from Bavaria, and they sat down and tasted my beers. And they said, this is great. They wish they could get this kind of beer in Germany.
Because it's very, the ingredients are fairly simple, basic, yeah, right? They're good, but...
There are four ingredients. You can't make it too complicated. And so it's a matter of how you use those four ingredients and just the variations in how the English did it versus how the Germans did it versus how the Italians do it. And here, because our culture is such a mishmash of all those groups, we've been able to blend our styles, our beer styles, and get different character that they don't experience over there because they have tradition. We don't have tradition here. We're a motley bunch, and so our tradition is innovation, I think, rather than a cultural heritage.
Are you always experimenting?
Always. I still brew at home. I have a difficulty sleeping if I don't have fermenters bubbling in the bedroom. I have to hear that little, that's my background.
Is that your white noise?
It could be the CO2 poisoning, I guess. That might be what puts me out. But yeah, just as long as I have that background sound, I sleep more comfortably.
Does it start at home then?
I think the best influence. You can experiment without threat of ego if you really screw up. Worst case, you just invert 5-gallon jugs and dump them down the drain.
Yeah. Rather than one of these huge mixes that you do here.
Yeah, rather than have your Pilsner turn Belgian on
you. Have you had situations where you've had to do huge, very expensive dumping?
Only one time. I don't know exactly what caused it, and I think that's why I couldn't deduce the origin of the problem, but I was making a batch of Blue Diamond at Barley's. They're, you know, pale, light German lager, and about 2 weeks into it, it tasted like it was a pale Belgian ale. It put on some funk that just had me concerned. I had no idea what was in it. You know, of course, I had to have the correct beer to keep on tap, and I try to be a purist. You know, if I'm going to make a specific style, I try to make it as true to style as possible, and you really can't pass something Belgian off as German.
And how many go-to recipes do you have now in your repertoire?
Around 200.
Wow.
And a lot of those are just hybridizations. You know, there's 70, roughly 70 basic beer styles. And when you start to hybridize a few of them, you can really come up with some interesting stuff.
Now, I was telling you about my two sons who are home brewing, and they're very into it. They're very serious about it. And my one son, Patrick, had thought about using cilantro, and you immediately looked at me and said, no! Is this from experience,
This is from experience.
Yeah?
Yeah. Green vegetative things generally don't go well. They have a tendency to taste like somebody just got run over with a lawnmower.
So what would you say is your favorite? Do you have a favorite, or is it like picking your favorite kid?
It is like picking your favorite kid, but I think it's really more than that. It's a matter of the setting. It's a matter of the environment. The beers go in different places at different times. It's not like a guy should, you know, some people are attached to, say, a Miller Lite, and they're going to drink Miller Lite whether they're eating or drinking or smoking or sitting out in the sunshine. But different settings, different environments have different beers that go better with them. Have a certain kind of food. If you're going to have fish and chips, have a good malty English ale. If you're going to have some barbecued ribs, have a smoked beer, a German rauch beer. It's just the flavors are so complementary. If you're going to have a great you know, a ham and cheese omelet in the morning, half a German Hefeweizen.
You know, you got to have that with the omelet.
Absolutely.
Come on.
The clove just really brings out the grain, you know, the flavors out of the eggs and the cheeses. And
what is currently on tap that you're doing now?
The seven we currently have on, we have the vanilla porter, of course, which is an English porter using some bourbon vanilla beans from Madagascar. The pale ale, our pale ale 101. German Hefeweizen, homebrew Hefeweizen, and our Irish red ale we brought out. It's the progenitor. It's really the original beer of Ireland. It was around a few hundred years before stouts became, before Arthur Guinness had a gleam in his eye. And the English ESB, an extra special bitters, and then an IPA, an India Pale Ale, very English style, and then the big Russian Imperial Stout, which is 9.1%. And it's not a beer for drinking in the summer. It's a beer for keeping you warm in the winter.
Yes. Yeah. And sleepy.
Yeah, and sleepy, yeah. And putting in ice cream so you can have a beer float.
I know. Yeah. You mentioned that. That's a
favorite pastime.
I can tell you, and let me run down this list of why I like your beers and craft beers in general, and tell me if you agree with this. Tastes better than the ones that are mass-produced.
Absolutely. Now, there are exceptions, of course. I have tasted some craft beers that I don't want to taste again. But in general, you're going to find people who are more attached to the flavors they can produce. They love the experimentation and love the adventure of a craft beer.
What do you think of a Guinness?
I like a Guinness if you're having something that's, you know, potatoes. I love the potatoes. It's actually not bad. And it makes a pretty good stew. It's not overly bitter, and it goes well with lamb and pork.
The thing you mentioned, there's more alcohol. It's like 5, sometimes up to, what is it, 10, even more percentage.
Yeah, there's some powerful beers right here. Literally, there's some fellas out of Scotland right now, the Brew Dogs over there, and they're putting out stuff that's 50 to 60% alcohol.
Really?
Take you right down and sit on you.
Yes,
yeah.
It will. Now, I have read that there are more, this doesn't seem right to me, but I guess it's possible, there are more health benefits with beer than there is with red wine.
Don't know if it's more, but they are definitely different. You're going to find a lot more vitamins in beer, especially because of the yeast. The yeast is of course taken completely out of wine. Do everything they can to get it to settle out and age it and get it to clarify it as much as possible. A beer that is still a little bit yeasty is going to have a lot of B vitamins, and it's going to help the liver in actually processing alcohol.
And more choices with craft brews now. Over 1,600 the last I looked in this country.
There's more than 2,000 breweries now in this country.
Okay.
And most of them are putting out half a dozen beers, so we're looking probably in the neighborhood 10 to 12,000.
And probably
beers.
Who knows how many more are applying for licenses as we speak, right?
About 300 as of last week that I read of in the Brewers Association publications.
And so do you pick and choose what festivals you might become part of? And
I like to go to as many as possible. I just like to talk to people about beer. People who come to a beer festival, I don't know how many times I've seen somebody show up with a friend, and the friend says, I don't drink beer, but this is pretty good. I said, well, now you drink beer. You found something you enjoy. You redefined beer, and that's what I love about it. I try to go to everyone I can.
You just kind of mentioned it, and that was next on the list. One of the benefits is that you get to meet the people who make the beer, which I think is very cool, because, you know, I'd gotten to talk to you over the years about all this stuff. Now, here's an interesting stat, and we just kind of went over that a little bit, but in 2014, the number of brewery licenses in the United States reached the highest ever, topping out at 4,500.
Yeah.
So it's really going, isn't it?
Yes, it is finally catching on. It's going to be a while before places like Vegas catch up to the density of either San Diego or Portland. Portland is pushing probably 80 different breweries in town in one city. And we're barely breaking into the double digits.
Do you think in places like that where the weather is a little friendlier and greener, that it's because they can local source their ingredients?
No, actually, I think the weather is less friendly there. When it's raining out, you really don't want to walk down to the pub or take your bicycle because you're going to have a big dirt streak up your back. So people generally avoid it. But you'll have a better selection at the store.
What are your favorite recipes?
One of my favorites I have to have around almost all the time is a German Hefeweizen, a wheat beer that has, you know, the clove and banana character with the yeast from northern Germany.
Do you tend to go less towards the bitter and something that's a little smoother like that?
Generally, if I have one that's overly bitter, a really hoppy beer, I have a tendency to get heartburn from it. So I will generally not go too serious with it. I love the flavors of hops. They're just one of the most precious things there is. Hmm. Dave Otto up at Draft House, at Big Dog's Draft House, he makes some of the best hoppy beers I've ever had in my life. He puts together some great stuff. And whenever I can, whenever I get a chance to get out, I like to go up there and I'll have his double red or the War Dog IPA just to come slap myself in the taste buds
with a brat
I'm missing. Generally. Yep.
Yeah.
And yeah, that does help settle it, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does help settle the stomach.
Are you guys close-knit community?
Very.
The craft brewers?
Very. Yeah, it's not a competitive field. You know, it's not like somebody's in real estate or something fighting for the customer. Literally what it amounts to is you're not taking a piece of the pie. Every time a new brewery opens up, you're adding a pie.
The different websites and Facebook pages and stuff, whether it's Las Vegas Beer and Brewery, I think is one of them, they all mention everybody.
Yeah.
It does seem like that. Yeah. Now, you carry other beers from other craft brewers here at all? Or are you?
Absolutely. And in fact, the only beers I carry here are from Nevada breweries. I just finished out my Joseph James Citra Rye Pale Ale. I ran out of that. I just put on Big Dog's Las Vegas Lager, and so I'll carry whatever. I have 5 serving tanks and 10 lines, so I have space to carry something from my friends here in town.
I think it was a couple of weeks ago when we came here and sampled the flight. You said occasionally I just like to go out and have a gin and tonic.
Yeah, absolutely.
I see that.
That's an experimental thing. I think I like to experiment making liquors too. Have it coming up with a good gin recipe.
Will that ever be here?
Not in this location. We do want to do 4 breweries altogether, and in one of them I do want to put in a distillery.
So expansion is in the plans.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's the market in this town is really primed for it. There's so many people that are discovering good beer. And the only thing, if you can give them a place to do it, there's that many more people are going to. I know how much entertainment and how much pleasure I got out of enjoying real beer for a change, rather than just trying to dilute my liver as much as possible with a regular yellow beer, go for something that actually tasted good. And if I can...
Sticks with you.
Yeah, if I can make it convenient for people, I want to go in as many places as I can and make it convenient for
people
to have fresh
beer. Isn't it how that has evolved over the last, 30 years maybe?
It's great. It's a fantastic...
Yeah.
We're growing up. It's great.
Well, expansion is great because that means there's going to be more of the type of beer that you are producing. And it's just been great to know you all these years. Let us know when the next big thing is happening with you. When's the next festival that you guys are involved with?
I believe we'll be in the SLS on a week later, and a week after that, the Great Vegas Beer Festival downtown. And I think the weekend after that, I'm probably just going to go hang out at the Highland Games and throw big heavy things.
You put the kilt back on?
Yeah.
Yeah, I like that. That was great. Jim Wilson, thank you so much. Old School Brewing Company. It's a fantastic place. Not only the beer is great, but the food is great that you pair it with. And it's Durango and West Desert Inn. Thanks for having us out here, Jim.
Thank you, Jim. I appreciate it.
The Old School Brewing Company, a really nice place to take the whole family, and they're open 24/7 right across from Desert Breeze Park. And it's like Jim Wilson says, if you treat beer like food, people will keep coming back. Thanks for listening to The Fake Show, and if you have any suggestions for future Craft Brew Pub episodes, just email us at our fakeshow.com website, or you can get in touch with us at our Facebook or Twitter pages.
The Fake Show is filmed in front of a live studio audience. Join us next time from Studio G inside Jim Tofty's house and talk with all your friends at thefakeshow.com.